Welcome to the program Study in the Chapel. God's Word is supreme at Chapel Ministries. We consider it absolutely essential to a proper relationship with God. We study it, we love it, we rely on it every minute of every day. The following program is an edited recording of the regular Bible studies we hold, and we decided to share these with you in the hope that you too will be able to find inspiration, encouragement, and ultimately salvation through discovering Christ in Scripture. Our intention is to travel all the way through the Bible. It will be a challenging journey, but one that will undoubtedly bring you to a decision. Through this study, you will be faced with either believing or rejecting what God has said to us. It is our intention to provide you with enough knowledge to make an informed decision about God and His Word. We strongly encourage you to listen intently and diligently, because though at the moment you may not realize it, these things are truly a matter of life and death. In fact, these are matters of eternal life and eternal death. Never treat what God has said lightly. There's truly nothing more important to you. Now, join us as we seek God's will through His inspired Word.
On this page in my Bible, and probably yours too, the heading reads chapter 19. But it's going to feel a lot more like, you know, chapter 18b or maybe chapter 18 part 2 or something like that. You see, this is the continuation of the story that began in the last chapter with the arrival of those, as it's said there, the three men at Abraham's tent. Remember that? Of course you do. They finished what they came to do with respect to Abraham and Sarah, mission accomplished there. And then at the end of that previous chapter, they, verse 22, turned their faces from thence and went towards Sodom. The next assignment these mysterious strangers were going to have would be down in the Jordan Valley. And let me say, this one is not going to go as peacefully and pleasantly as that first one. We were told back there what this mission is by none other than Jehovah himself. He, in the form of a man, tells Abraham, verse 20, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which is come unto me, and if not, I will know. Of course, if you're familiar with the content of this chapter, you already know that there's a good reason for putting the chapter break here. Although we're picking up the story, we're picking up that story from the previous chapter. What happens here is quite unique and worthy of its own segmentation. It's rightly separated from that previous section because this is entirely new business with one or two cross-references back to chapter 18. Now, I know that's confusing, but you'll see what I mean as we go through this. Now, let me warn you again, this will be one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult chapter we've covered so far in the book of Genesis. For one thing, some of the content is very adult, shall I say. There will be a few things that will shock you. Secondly, the narrative is going to be difficult at times to unwind. Parts of this are going to be a bit tough to interpret. And there will be a few other things that you're going to wish we didn't have to talk about at all. As H.C. Leupold puts it, quote, there is hardly a more horrible account anywhere on the pages of Holy Writ. Martin Luther even said he couldn't read this chapter without a feeling of deep revulsion. But God put this in His Word for us to study, and that's what we're going to do. To begin with, we'll go ahead and read it all the way through. Now, as we're doing that, you're going to get curious about this or that, but please be patient. We will cover the details eventually. It may, by the way, take us a while to get to the parts that pique your interest, so it might not be a bad idea for you to study ahead on your own. In fact, I encourage you to do that with the entire Bible. Don't wait for me to cover these things. Take it upon yourself and do some research. There are actually people in this ministry that do that, people that come every week. They sometimes, very often, study the Bible on their own. And I suggest that you get into a good study habit with this stuff. There will be plenty for us all to discover if we put our minds to it. My point is, if you want to know more about this or any other chapter, get your study Bible out and dive in. Now, if you don't have any study materials and you want some suggestions, just contact us and we can give you some recommendations. Listen, I love it when people find this stuff compelling enough to study it on their own, so we're always glad to help out that effort. Okay, here we go. Chapter 19 of Genesis. Let me give you a warning that I haven't given in a while. We read out of the King James in this ministry. It is my favorite version for no good reason. I suggest that you read along in your own version. When we read the whole chapters, it's very easy for you to get lost because the versions, the modern version and this very old version, can be quite different. If you do get lost, just look up at the screen and you'll be able to see what verse we're on. If your head is down and you're really intent, I do actually try to name out the verses every couple of times here and there just to keep you in, you know, in sync with us. So here we go, Genesis 19, starting at verse 1. We're going to read all the way through. As I said, I'm reading out of the King James. And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, "Behold, now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early and go your ways." And they said, "Nay, but we will abide in the street all night." Verse 3, "And he pressed upon them greatly. And they turned in unto him and entered into his house, and he made them a feast and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. And they called unto Lot and said unto him, "Where are the men which came into thee this night? Bring them out unto us that we may know them." Verse 6, "And Lot went out at the door unto them and shut the door after him and said, 'I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Behold, now I have two daughters which have not known men. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and do ye to them as is good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing, for therefore came they under the shadow of my roof.' And they said, 'Stand back.' And they said again, 'This one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now will we deal worse with thee than with them.' And they pressed sore upon Lot, upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door." Verse 10, "But the men put forth their hand," these are the angels, "but the men put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them and shut to the door. And they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. And the men said unto Lot, 'Hast thou here any besides son-in-law and thy sons and thy daughters? And whatsoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place, for we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxen great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord hath sent us to destroy it.'" Verse 14, and Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, Arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. And while he lingered, the men laid upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto them, and they brought him forth and set him without the city. Verse 17, and it came to pass, when they had brought them forth abroad, that he said, Escape for thy life, look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. And Lot said unto them, Oh, not so, my lord. Behold now, thy servant hath found grace in thy sight, and thou hast magnified thy mercy, which thou hast showed unto me in saving my life. And I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me, and I die. Behold, now this city is near to flee unto, and it is a little one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. And he said unto him, See, I have accepted thee concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city for thee which thou hast spoken. Quickly, just so you don't get confused. Lot wants to escape, not to the mountain. He thinks he can't make it. He wants to go to another city. There are going to be five cities that are going to be destroyed. There are five cities in the plains. One of them is this little one that Lot wants to escape to. So they said, okay, go ahead and escape there. Haste thee, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till thou become thither. Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar. Verse 23, the sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. And Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord, and he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain, and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. Verse 29, and it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow, which he overthrew the cities into which Lot dwelt. And Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain and his two daughters with him, for he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. Get ready. And the firstborn said unto the younger, Our father is old, and there's not a man in the earth to come in unto us after the manner of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him that we may preserve seed of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he perceived not when she lay down, nor when she arose. And it came to pass on the morrow that the firstborn said unto the younger, Behold, I lay yesternight with my father. Let us make him drink wine this night also, and go thou in and lie with him, that we may preserve the seed of our father. Verse 35. And they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he perceived not when she lay down, nor when she arose. Thus were both the daughters of Lot with child by their father. And the firstborn bare a son and called his name Moab. The same is the father of the Moabites unto this day. And the younger, she also bare a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. The same is the father of the children of Ammon unto this day. I think Albert Barnes said it best when he wrote this about chapter 19 of Genesis. He says, it records a part of God's strange work. Strange because it consists in punishment and because it is foreign to the covenant of grace. Spot on. Now, there is so much that disturbs me here, and I'm guessing that's the impression a lot of you have gotten to. As I looked at your faces, I saw a lot of expressions like mine. Now, doesn't it surprise you that some parts of the Bible are just so unsettling? Now, we've had to deal with a few disturbing events in our journey through the Bible together, but I have to say, this has got to be one of the worst. From beginning to end, as we read this, we find ourselves sporting ick face, and it's a relief when we finally get to the end, isn't it? I've always told you how much I love the Bible, but I have to admit to you, I love Genesis 19 a whole lot less than the rest of it. Now, those of you who read something other than the King James will be able to immediately recognize that this chapter is the continuation of the 18th chapter. As we've been saying all along, you notice it better than I do because your verse 1 uses the definite article. For example, if you prefer the English Standard Version, it reads, "The two angels came to Sodom in the evening." The NIV renders it similarly, "The two angels arrived at Sodom in the evening." The definite article, "the," is here in these English language versions because the Hebrew definite article is in the original. Now, why the King James scholars chose to omit the article, I can't say, but it was a bad decision because it's a subtlety that we need if we want a complete understanding of what's happened and what will happen. Now, a quick reminder about what a definite article is. This is the description from thesaurus.com. Quote, "A definite article is an article that indicates that a noun refers to a specific thing or to something that's been identified previously, and that's why it should not have been left out." Now, we know who the two angels are. And without the definite article, we wouldn't realize that we knew who they were. We have already met them. These are two of the three divine beings from chapter 18. Of course, you remember them now, don't you? They were called men back there, but we figured out about halfway through that they were more than mere men. The third one, which is not mentioned here yet, of course, was God in the form of a man. That is extremely rare, but it happened in chapter 18, and then the other two were angels, and we figured that out because of what chapter 19 tells us. Now, near the end of chapter 18, we read that these two went on toward their next mission, that mission being described here in chapter 19. Let's read it again. Here it is, verse 22 of chapter 18. "And the men turned their faces from thence and went towards Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord." The men here are the same two angels that suddenly appear at the beginning of chapter 19. Why do you keep telling us that? Because there's a lot going on here that is a bit confusing. You have to know that these men, these angels, were on a very important mission. The third divine person, Jehovah himself, held back a bit so that Abraham could speak with him in that fascinating defense that you remember from the previous chapter on behalf of the righteous, mostly Lot of Sodom. Now, I know you really want to know much more. Now, let me say that again. You know how much we like to summarize our chapters when we get a chance. I don't want to do much more of that here because I don't want us to get too lost into which situation we're talking about. Hopefully, we've already covered enough so that you have the context of this story. However, again, because I know this is confusing, either reread chapter 18 for yourself or I suppose review our teachings on that chapter by going to our various media outlets. So let's get back to the two angels, the two divine beings who headed towards Sodom after visiting Abraham for a bit. It was a very nice and productive visit. And then verse 19 or chapter 19, verse 1, there came the two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. Obviously, these two boys were raised right, both Abraham and Lot greet in the most gracious way wandering strangers when they show up. But this is perhaps where the similarities end between those two. As this chapter opens, we find Lot strangely sitting at the gate of Sodom. And it's things like this that make me suspicious of the guy. I've said it before, he's really a complicated character. And now we read that he's hanging around the gate to the city. What is he doing there? Well, in ancient times, the city gates were in part the place where the judges sat to hear cases. That's a well-established and biblically confirmed fact. Here's a quick example. Now, please, we're not going to explain this much. I know you'll want me to, but if I did, we'd be here for a week. So fascinating, but we have to resist the temptation. Anyhow, here it is. 2 Samuel 15:2, and Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate, and it was so that when any man had a controversy, came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, "Of what city art thou?" And he said, "Thy servant is of one of the tribes of Israel." So that's one thing that goes on at the city gates. There are judges there that promise to make a connection with the leadership within the city. But historically, the city gate in ancient times was also where various business owners would set up their booths to sell their wares. Now, at the moment, we're trying to figure out why this chapter opens with Lot sitting at the entrance to the city. This is a wicked place through and through, and our question is, what the heck is Lot doing there? Maybe he set up shop on this spot. The last time we encountered him, he was a wealthy rancher. Maybe he was at the gate of that silly city selling leather or meat or something like that from his herds. J. Vernon McGee thinks that maybe Lot even got into politics since he arrived. Maybe he was one of those who were stationed at the gate helping resolve disputes among the various townsfolks. Actually, later on, we're going to find out that is most likely the reason he was there. Nonetheless, no matter why he's stationed there at the gates, it certainly appears that he's fully assimilated into society. Over the years, he must have slowly established himself as part of the local scene. Remember, we learned in the beginning he had set up his residence only at the border of the city. The King James said he pitched his tent towards Sodom, but if you look up the original word, it really means as far as, which means right up against, the inference being that he was right at the border, and that made us a little squishy when we covered it, didn't it? We had this sinking feeling that that was a really bad idea. Well, now we can see that our discomfort was justified. Here we are several years later, and Lot is just one of the boys. What's your point, John? It's very easy to get caught up into the worldly matters. That is what's happened to Lot. This is part of the reason why he has to be rescued. Now, let me be fair. There's no reason to believe, nor is there anything in the record that says that Lot was involved in any of the shady shenanigans going on in the region. It's just that, yeah, couldn't you choose a little nicer neighborhood to conduct business? I mean, it's really not a good look. It reminds me of those preachers whose ministry is solely focused on trying to save strippers or drag queens or something like that, to the point that they're down there every Friday night working the crowd. Yeah, it's a bit suspect. And listen, I'm not saying we shouldn't preach to certain types of crowds. I mean, after all, Jesus was a friend of sinners, but never forget, you're not Jesus, and you should really be careful. Lot, you're worrying your Uncle Abraham and us too. Verse 1, and came the two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground, and he said, behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early, and go on your ways. And they said, nay, but we will abide in the street all night. Now, immediately, this becomes quite mysterious. At least it's a bit difficult to follow. One of the most challenging aspects to discern from this whole story, the one encompassing the 18th and 19th chapter, is who are these guys? Seriously, there is no easy way to characterize these beings and what their purpose is. Who are they and what have they come to do? Now, I'm not going to be able to give you any definite answers, so don't expect any. Yeah, we have a vague idea. Yes, we know what ultimately happens, but this just seems so foggy. And if I'm reading the research right, no one else has any definite answers either. But let me ask you, should we expect anything else? This situation has caused the exceedingly rare blending of two worlds, the material and the spiritual. And when that happens, there's bound to be some unanswered questions, don't you think? Now, as long as you know that, I think we can proceed, which I guess we'll do next time. There's lots to cover. Make sure you bring your thinking caps, as Leslie Hale used to say. We have some things that are going to be difficult to grasp, but we will go through them. See you then.
We hope this study has blessed you. God's Word is a great treasure, and it's our belief that a thorough, purposeful study of it will bring all of God's children to an understanding of His eternal plan of redemption. It is our prayer that this will be so for all of our listeners. Please join us again soon. New content is being added all the time, so make sure you check back often. For more information on Chapel Ministries, including our YouTube channel and podcasts, please visit www.chapelontheweb.com. And if God has laid it upon your heart to share materially with us, we encourage you to follow the links to our secure giving page. Please note, Chapel Ministries is not an IRS-registered nonprofit organization, and your donations to this program are not tax-deductible. It's our hope that you do not rely on taxing authorities to decide for you who is worthy of your generosity.